them in the back. Good morning, welcome, thank you for joining us. And I can't begin to talk on gratitude without offering my gratitude to our hosts, the Young Israel, and to Shiva Hatzal and Rav Karagin for doing the organizing. My name is Ron Novick. I have this book. I have the privilege to be the dean of the Azrael Graduate School of Jewish Education and Administration. It could be my whole time to say my title. At Yeshiva University, I'm also a clinical psychologist, and I love talking about this topic because invariably, I look at my notes from the last time I spoke and I say, oh, I don't have to start with that story because I have 10 more stories. Like, you know, in the past week, a mom in my office complains that she just gave her daughter a prize for accomplishing something, and the daughter's response was, what's my next prize? What are you getting me for my next prize? Not thank you. Not I really appreciate it, but what's my next prize? I have a 12-year-old boy in my office who fetches that all his sister ever does is say, give me, I want, get it. If I do that, what will you give me? But it's not just children, because around the Shabbos table, there were adults questioning. You know what adults are questioning about? There's too many circles. Another Sunday with three circles. Could you believe it? More circles. How many circles do I have to go to? I'm thinking, and children are hearing this. So we have to think about, why are we not grateful? And I want to tell you from a psychological point of view, what we get by doing this. The field of psychology, my field, clinical psychology, began, it has a very long history, of looking at disease and deficit, of understanding and studying why people do crazy, inappropriate, inadequate things. And about 30 years ago now, the field of psychology turned on its heels and said, you know what, we could study drug addicts forever. We could study depressed people forever. We could study people in horrible life circumstances and were traumatized forever. But what about the people who live in horrible circumstances and do well and thrive? What about the children in ghettos and in low-functioning schools who succeed? Why don't we study them? Why don't we study the people who are not smokers? Why don't we study positive psychology? And that gave birth to the field of positive psychology that said, let's study resilience. Let's study those people who make it. And in the field of positive psychology, certain traits have been identified as being critical for well-being. And one of them is our topic today. It's gratitude. Ladies and gentlemen, being a thankful person lengthens your life. Changes your life. It gives you incredible benefits. So what I want to do today is define a little bit what gratitude is, share with you a little bit of the Jewish source material, but mostly because our time is very short, talk about how we become not just the people of the world, but the people of the thankful, and how we bring Hakar HaTov into our lives in a way that makes us and our children happy. What is gratitude? Gratitude is actually defined as much more than saying thanks. Gratitude is defined as a felt sense of wonder, thankfulness, and appreciation. One of my children, when he was little, everything was awesome. Awesome. That sense of wonder, that sense of being able to be awed, is a way of expressing gratitude. It's saying, wow, this is amazing. That's a statement of gratitude, of appreciation. Gratitude has been correlated with high self-esteem. People who have high self-esteem are more grateful. People who are more grateful have high self-esteem. With optimism, with positive mood, with life satisfaction, with reduced stress, with better sleep and better social relationships. Again, in sum, being thankful is really good for our health. So where do we see gratitude in Jewish thought? And you have some of this. I'm going to not go through any of the sources inside. Just give you a quick brushstroke. And again, I have to always say by caveat, I'm a psychologist. I am not a Jewish text scholar. So I do things backwards. I don't start from the text. I start from the psychology. And then I say, wait a minute. Long before Skinner or Freud or someone was studying this in psychology, I think there's a pure rabbit about this. I think there's a Gemara. Then I go to the source, whereas the rabbi would go first to the source and the psychology would come later. So how do I know that gratitude really should be in our nishmas? First of all, it's in our very name. It's in our essence. Yehudim, same root as hoda, the same root as giving thanks. Rashi comments on the Sukkim in the Chumash when Leah gives birth to Yehuda. She calls him Judah, and she gives off having children. Rashi says, I have taken more than my share, so now I need to give thanks. That's why she names the child, basically. The fact that thankfulness and giving thanks is central to the Yikra Rabba argues is clear in the fact that when Mashiach comes, when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, all sacrifices will be abolished, except for Korban Toda. The thanks sacrifice, the thanksgiving offering, will still be given. The Rashi also explains that, and it's a famous medrash, that why could Moshe not start the plague of the river Nile? Because the Nile gave him life, saved his life, and so he could not turn the table on something that he was thankful for. And if you want yet another proof, when we daven in shul, we have a shaliach tzibur doing our davening for us, correct? He stands in our stead. He davens for the kehila. What's the one part of the Amidah that he cannot say for you? You cannot delegate somebody else to be your gratitude marker. You have to give thanks yourself. The centrality of Thanksgiving is very, very clear. But if gratitude is so central, and if it's so much a part of the Yiddish and Neshama, why do we struggle with it? Why is it so difficult? I think we have to look at something that my colleague who just spoke, David Pelkowitz, talks about as an affluenza. It's a virus that's going around, the affluenza virus. You've heard of this? That we have, tonight there are more than we've ever had in our lives. We are doing better than we've ever done in our lives. Our children have more. I always think about the fact that, you know, my grandparents just davened that they should be able to send their kids to high school and maybe some college. You know, my parents, college, maybe graduate school. For me, it's like it's a zoom. Let it be professionals. It's a zoom. No, we don't live, thank God, we don't live in the Depression. We don't live during the Shoah. There's no question for our communities, for the most part, that we're going to be able to provide for our children. And provide often means, okay, I'm 5 years old, where's my iPad, iPod, cell phone, you know, the latest, the opposite of this, a Dutch Jew writing from the Westerbork concentration camp, writes, S.D. Edithilism writes, that as life became harder and more threatening, it also became richer. Because the fewer expectations we have, the more good things of life become unexpected gifts that we accept with gratitude. When you have nothing, a crumb of bread is something to be thankful for. When you have everything, what's the chance for the bread? We had a wonderful scholar residence in Shul at my Shul, Young Israel West Hempstead, Rabbi Rosner, who is originally from the Five Towns, and he spoke about, imagine if we just said brachot with kavanah. If we just said, just pick one bracha a day that you say with kavanah, bracha tashem. It's gratitude. It's expressing our gratitude of where this came from. The Rabbeinu Bachya in Phobos Halvavos, in his introduction, writes that people grow up surrounded with a superabundance of divine favors, which they experience continuously, and to which they become so used to that they come to regard these as an essential part of their being. Why should I say thank you for bread? There's always bread. Why should I say thank you for good health? It's assumed I'm surrounded by all of those things. Good morning, and you missed my Hakara
HaTov. Thank you.
We're talking about gratitude. I have to give Hakara HaTov.
Thank you very much. And thank you for your sons.
Thank you. Thank you. So, interesting that We're going to come back to this Rabbeinu Bachya in a moment, because modern psychology actually did an experiment that tested this and found that he's absolutely right. Our sages make a clear argument against ignoring, a callous ignoring of the goodness around us and the goodness we've been granted in a Pirkei Avot that used to give me enormous trouble. There's a mission in Pirkei Avot. I think I have the reference on the sheets. Yes, it's Karak 3, Mishnah 9, that gave me enormous trouble because I love looking at nature. I get high. You can't say anymore Rocky Mountain High because it's now legal to get high in Rocky Mountains, but I get a kind of, you know, spiritual experience when I'm in the mountains. I just love seeing mountains. So I come across, I've been learning Pirkei Avot one year, and I come across this Pirkei Avot where Shimon says that if you're walking and you say, how beautiful is this tree? It's as if you are guilty, punishable by death. Whoa, I do this all the time. I say how beautiful all those paths. Look at that lake. Look at this scenery. Unbelievable. You have to learn what the Mefarshim say. Bunin writes about it. As the traveler who does this is trivially interrupting his studies to just simply remark, oh, pretty tree. Oh, nice mountain. What you're missing is who gave you that tree? Who put that mountain there? Someone asked me, by the way, a family member asked me, just out of the blue, we're sitting around one day, she said, you believe in God? Said, yes. She said, well, why? I said, mountains. The human body, children. Like, what brilliant entity created and mastermind all this? Of course I believe in God. I couldn't even understand the question. But the point is that it's fine to be awestruck, but we have to be thankful about the person who's bringing us this awesome world. Here's the psychology research that dovetails with this. Fresh, a researcher on gratitude and attention, describes the following study. A man, he took people and gave them the following scenarios. You go to work. On your way to work, it's a typical commute. Everything goes fine. You get there on record time. No car problems. On your way home, the same commute. No big problems. The cross trunks cooperate, which is in and of itself an ace. You make it home in record time. No big potholes. You do not get home that afternoon and say, whoa, that was great. Morning and afternoon were the same. But imagine in the morning there were 17 accidents. You were stuck 3 hours on the cross trunks. You got a flat tire. You got to work late. You got yelled at. Then you go home, and you have a smooth trip home. Your attitude on that trip home is, whoa, that's amazing. I'm so grateful that my afternoon was different than my morning. This is exactly what Rabbeinu Bachya was talking about. It's the context. When we're surrounded by goodness, we lose the goodness. We lose that ability to recognize and say, thanks, oh my gosh, I so appreciate this, because it becomes par for the course. Years ago, I was checking in on Pesach, where I was a scholar in residence, to a hotel. The hotel was filled with tired, traveling Jews, Erev Pesach, schlepping their pechlach, schlepping their children. Of course, they can't be that tired because they're not making Pesach. They're in a hotel where someone is now going to feed them for the entire 9 days. They're getting up to the desk. There's a very long line at the check-in desk. I had already checked in, went to my room. The cards didn't work. Couldn't get in the room. Back to the desk. And tell them, the angry people at the desk, catching my, you didn't give me my room. I should be able to check in. Of course, check-in's not till 3. It's only noon. Where am I going to go? What am I going to do? There's 14 tea rooms. There's 17 activities. They're catching. Nonstop. I get up to the desk, and I say to the person, it's not urgent. My keys aren't working. If it's not a good time, you can do it later. And I just want to tell you in advance, thank you. Thank you for the whole week. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for opening your hotel to us. And the person said to me, you made my day. You made my day. Because
all he was getting was negativity in the context of that. If every single person held by every single Jew, really, it's such a little shame. Every single Jew would go up to him and say, thank you very much. Thank you for opening your hotel to us. Thank you for making a beautiful holiday for us. Thank you for welcoming us. If everyone would do it, mine would have been not so impressive. But the fact that it was unusual made it important. So Torah has a very clear prescription for us. It says that we need to focus. Look at, you have this on your source sheet, I'm going to copy your source sheet, but you have on your source sheets the psukim from the Chumash where they talk about Yom Tov. It's the section in the Chumash where it talks about Yom Tov. And in the middle of, there's Yom Tov in Pasuk 21, there's Yom Tov in Pasuk 24, what's Pasuk 22 do with it? Pasuk 22 in the middle talks about, look at it, it talks about leaving the ends of your field for honey, for the poor people. Why is it inserted there? The Balai Musar explained that when we are going to the pilgrimages of the Yom Tovim, which are what this section of the Chumash is about, we're on a spiritual high. We're filled with gratitude. We recognize all the goodness that Hashem has given us, and we stand in awe and reverence when we see the service of the Kohanim. Amazing, right? Then it's easy for us to give thanks. But reality sets in the minute you leave the holy city and you go back to your workshop or farm, and it's business as usual. How do we retain that notion of gratitude and thankfulness when we're back? Tilling our fields, milking our cows, the Chumash comes and tells us, remember there are those less well off than you. Remember to be grateful, even now, and remember, obviously, to care for every Jew. There is another issue that interferes with our ability to feel gratitude. So issue one is we don't focus on it. We're in a sea of affluenza, and we don't see how good we have it. There's another issue, it's called responsibility bias. If you ask people in a corporation, you ask five members of a team, you just finished a project, how much did you contribute to the project? Each member of the team will say, I did 30% of the work. 5 times 30 does not add up to 100%, ladies and gentlemen. I'm no math wizard, but I will tell you right now. Everybody credits themselves with too much. Do it in married couples. Ask them, how much do you take care of the housework? You'll get answers that add up to more than 100%. We give ourselves more credit than we are due. This has have to do with you. What does this have to do with gratitude? Well, guess what? If I have a great trip on the Cross Promise, I say, I'm a good driver. I followed ways. By the way, I call it the ways of God. I followed the ways of God. Never, ever go anywhere without ways if you have to commute to Washington Heights. It's very important. I know every street in the Bronx by now. But the point is that I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to be biased to say, this is me. I did this. A beautiful garden. I planted that beautiful garden. Not, I say it all the time, nobody waters like God. Whatever it is, I can water all I want, I can put the sprinklers out. Rain is the best thing for the garden. There's nothing like rain. You have to have a heart of tov and realize, as much as I think I'm responsible for, and it goes back to Brachot, Baruch Atah Hashem, it's not the farmer, it's not the planter, it's Hashem Yibarach who gave me this vegetable, this fruit, this yummy cookie that I'm eating. Thanks to the baker, but also it's from God. So we have these two issues, habituation and responsibility bias. How do we get around it? How do we become more grateful people? Well, prayer, tefillah, when we do it well, is an antidote to both habituation and responsibility bias. How many shuls do we walk into that we look at the Aron, and above the Aron it says, Da l'fnei mi ata, know before whom you stand. That's a reminder to us. Who am I davening to? Who am I thankful for? What am I thankful for? Who am I saying before I say anything else, before Bakasha, before I ask for anything? Who am I thanking? And what do I have to be grateful for? we have to acknowledge God's contribution when we daven. If not, our prayers are pretty meaningless. How do we achieve focus? So there's been an enormous amount of research on this, on how do we create an attitude of gratitude, and it's going to sound absolutely absurd and silly. You have to write it down. Every night before you go to bed, get yourself a little notebook, get yourself a little piece of scrap paper. I haven't seen the research, by the way, yet, if it works on an iPhone. No, I'm serious. Like, you could write it on your iPhone as an electric journal, or write it on your iPad or something. I don't know yet if that works, and I'll tell you why I have a question about it in a moment. But writing down three things I am thankful for. Not three things that made me happy today. Not three good things that happened to me. Three things I'm thankful for. I am thankful for. I appreciate that. I'm in awe of, and I'm thankful. Three things a day. Here's the research. 10 weeks. One group did this for 10 weeks. The second group wrote daily irritations. You can imagine the mood of that group. Every night I wrote down three things that bothered me. First of all, I wouldn't go to sleep because I'd still be writing. Okay. And a third group wrote 10 random events. 10 things that happened today. They don't have to affect you. Just 10 things that happened in the world. No emphasis on being positive or negative. After 10 weeks, those who wrote about gratitude were more optimistic, felt better about their lives. But here's this one I can't believe. I really can't believe it. They exercised more, had fewer visits to doctors. They were healthier. They were physically healthier. Changed their lives. Being grateful changed who they were. Changed their lives. I said before I would say why it... I have to look at my... I don't know if my watch battery died, so I don't know. I'm not even watching that. So you have 10 minutes. The studies are beginning to question... what impact technology versus writing or speaking or talking have, and the challenge is that we are right now on the cusp of two different generations. I love it when my 23-year-old baby, my youngest is 23, says to me, "Oh, I'll never be as good with the electronics as those young kids." And I'm thinking, what about me? And I know my 3-year-old granddaughter can swipe. She calls me, she, 3 years old, dials me on FaceTime and says, "Softy, hold on, it's reconnecting. We have a bad connection." She's at three. "Softy, I have to go where I have better wireless." But the research that is illustrative, and I do think about 23-year-olds and even 18-year-olds and 15-year-olds are still in the generation where the pen and paper has some purpose in their lives. So the research was done with students taking a high-stakes test. They were either given a phone call from mom, where they heard mom's voice, or a text message. Those who got a phone call from mom showed signs of decreased anxiety, lower physiological signs of anxiety, galvanic skin response, heart rate, breathing, all were positively impacted.
There's no plurality to email or text.
That may be. Again, but I do think that we are at a point where we may have a generation. I find this already with my students, where I can't assume, like I like reading a book. I really do not like reading on the screen. But we're getting to a generation of kids who are going to be just as comfortable reading on their Kindle as we are comfortable reading in books. And we're going to have to redo all the research. But that's why I'm not sure if keeping a gratitude journal by saying, "Siri, write down that I'm thankful for my husband and my children." I don't know if that's the same as actually writing it down. And I'm an empiricist, so I would want to study it before knowing whether my hypothesis that for people of my age, it's not going to be the same unless you write it down. Saying it to yourself is not enough. You literally have to write it down in a journal. It's this one of the smallest investments you'll make that will have one of the biggest returns. I want to close with a couple of thoughts, and then leave a little bit of time for questions. Gratitude and happiness are partners. They go together. Grateful people are happier people. Happier people are grateful. Reb Nachman of Bratslav says, "Gratitude rejoices with our sister joy and is always ready to light a candle and have a party." I love that line. Nachman says this. Gratitude doesn't much like the old cronies of boredom, despair, and taking life for granted. There's no room for this in gratitude. There's new research, by the way, on something connecting gratitude and generosity. It's very clear that when we give thanks, we reap benefits. There's also research now that when we give, we get benefits. Adam Grant has written an unbelievable book called Give and Take. I highly recommend it. And talks about the immense benefits to givers. But there's research now on this thing called upstream generativity. What is that? That's when one person at the toll pays for the person behind them, and then that person pays, and then that person pays. And there have now been links of hundreds and thousands of givers anonymously giving to the person behind them, paying for their meal, paying for their... And I can tell you, being on the receiving end of this, all it makes you do is want to give. Here's one of my favorite stories. My mother lives in Florida, where I've been introduced to Publix, like the nicest grocery store in the world. It's so nice in Publix. So she's shopping in Publix, and she's a chatter. So she says to the woman in front of her, "Those are very interesting. I never saw those nectarines before. Are they good?" "I don't know, some new white nectarine, some new color." She says, "Oh, they're fantastic. They're absolutely fantastic." The woman checks out, leaves her nectarines on the belt. My mother says, "You forgot your nectarines." And the woman says, "No, they're a gift for you. I bought them, you keep them. Enjoy them." Do you know what my mother did? My mother took the grapes in her wagon. Now, my mother doesn't know this research, but it's just, this is what it does. This is what generosity and thankfulness and gratitude do. They make us better and nicer persons. Piglet, I have a quote for you from Piglet. Piglet noticed that even though he had a very small heart, it could hold a rather large amount of gratitude. And we really do need to teach our children to be grateful, to teach them to be thankful, to teach them to resonate, to stop in a moment and say, "Aren't we lucky that we get to have sunshine today? Aren't we lucky that we get to be together? Isn't this a yummy meal that we're having together on Shabbat?" We just have to stop some of the fetching and make room for the gratefulness. And, Anne Frank has said how wonderful it is that nobody needs to wait a single moment before starting to improve the world. It starts with us. We improve the world every time we say. So thank you.
There are different ways of being generous. In terms of things like monetarily, something that costs money. Is there any difference or?
I could do a whole talk on generosity. It's another whole talk. I'll just tell you one really amazing study. People were given $50 and told that you're given $50. It's yours. Do anything with it you want. And they measured your happiness levels before and after you got the $50. Well, guess what? You give someone $50, their happiness level shows a boost. You will get happier if you get $50. If you find $50 on the street today, you're going to be happier. I guarantee it. It might take $100 with inflation now, but $50 would make me happy. It's okay. But the happiness boost that they got very quickly dissipated. They repeated the study, and this time they said, "We're giving you $50. There's just one rule. You must give it to somebody or something else. You cannot use it for yourself. You could either buy something for someone, you can give it to charity. You have to give the $50 away in some form." Same happiness boost, but it lasted. Didn't go away. It lasted for weeks. We feel better when we give. And it doesn't have to be our money. It's however we want to do it. And I think we feel better when we're grateful also. I think we feel better when we say thank you. I think we feel better when we tell someone, I appreciated that. That was very nice that you did it. I think one of the reasons we feel better is that when you do that, people thank you back. People say, "Wow, you made me feel so great." You get a smile. You get that human connection, which we so want in today's world. So I just think it's a wonderful thing. And we do. We need to teach our children, by the way, how you say thankful for things you don't want. What do you say when grandma knits you a toothpick sweater again for Hanukkah? How do you say thank you, Grim. I know how much I love knitting. It's so sweet that you did this for me, even though you know you're not wearing that sweater. How do you, I tell the story all the time. I'm old enough. Some people in this room will know this expression. My mother taught me to write a bread and butter note. You know what a bread and butter note is? A bread and butter note is a thank you after you have a meal at someone's house. You don't go anywhere without a house to skip. When my boys, well, I have only boys, but when they went to Eretz Yisrael for the year in Israel, I taught them what a hostess gift is. I said, you do not go. You're going to be eating at a lot of people's houses for Shabbos. Every single time you bring something, if you're not sure of kosher, you can always bring flowers. If you're not sure about who's allergic, bring a bottle of wine. Make sure it's mavusha. Don't ever go to anyone's house without a hostess gift. That's what we do. That's how you show your appreciation that they're hosting you. My point is, we have to directly teach this. We can't assume that children today are growing up in a culture and a climate that will teach them graciousness, that will teach them manners, that will teach them kindness. We are living kind of in a swamp. And so if we don't teach it very directly and intentionally, my husband's father, Rabbi Shalom, taught his boys, also he had sons, how to shake hands. I had lessons. Because he said a handshake has meaning. It shows what kind of a person you are, and if you don't do it well, I'm going to make you do it again. We need to be talking about teaching our children how to say thank you, and if you don't say it nicely enough,
thanks, Grandma.
No, we're going to make you do it again, because it's very important, and we're going to teach you how to say thanks in your two world. We're going to teach you, we're going to show by example that when we daven, I have the spirit of thanks in my heart. I just noticed at this Shabbos, I noticed that when I daven, I get very intense on my shoulders, get up here, and I just put your shoulders down. Thank you all very much. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you.